We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day. Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct. What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers, since we last recorded, had a really nice win against the Denver Nuggets, 93-89. The defense came back. Anthony Davis looked like a sort of like him, like himself. He even said at the end, "We're back." Really good night to get back on track. Got a couple more big games coming up this week, as we talked about in the last pod, but we did get some bad news within the context of that since then. Mike, LeBron is going to be missing the next two games at the very least. It looks like he's had a setback with his ankle.
Yeah. So when we talked to LeBron after the second game that he played and when he left and didn't come back with the final 6 minutes, it was the team made it very clear that he didn't re-aggravate the ankle, but that it just remains sore. Like it remained, he's in Woj said in his story that he's having trouble making hard cuts and exploding. And I thought that we did see some explosion in the first halves of both games, but you know, obviously he said that it got more sore as things went in the second half. So this is a bit of Pete, give it some, take it away some. And you already mentioned it, the AD thing. That is huge to me. That is huge news. We've been kind of hinting at that. Okay, wait, are we going to see AD be able to take his game up to another level? And guess what? We already did. So that's huge. The Lakers needed that element if they were going to have a chance to win the title. And since we hadn't seen it, I think it was fair to kind of, you know, there was a part of us that expected it, but it was good to see that come out against Denver. And that's, I think, something he can still build on, because he's still not at 100%. But that only works in terms of the whole team effect if LeBron can also be LeBron. And so these are then you worry about the whole building chemistry, building cohesion, which units are going to play together, all that stuff. But the two most important things are this AD and LeBron dynamic. So Darius, what I'm curious about is, all right, where do we go from here with LeBron, and how confident are we that he's going to be able to get close enough to himself to make a real run? And even if we just want to focus on the first round, like get to where he needs to get for the Lakers to beat a good opponent in the first round, and how what you saw against the Denver game might play into that as well, in addition to not just AD, but, you know, Mark and Wes and the way they play defense, all that kind of stuff together. So where do you want to go with that?
Yeah, Mike. I mean, LeBron said it himself, right? If he's not back to being himself, then the Lakers' chances are severely impacted negatively, right? And at this point, I think I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you guys are, like, what level of concern that you guys have. I would imagine you're both concerned as well. But if on a scale of 1 to 10, my concern right now is probably in the 7 to 8 range. Like, it's not low. He had a high ankle sprain. Like, Brian Windhorst has been sort of hammering this or beating this drum pretty loudly from the instant that LeBron's diagnosis was that he had a high ankle sprain. That it's a different sport, obviously, but football players get this injury a lot, right? More so than basketball players, just because of the nature of the game and bodies piling up on you a lot, right? Guys getting rolled up on that way. And there are players, Windhorst has said this, so I'm sort of parroting him here, but Windhorst has said that some guys have said, like, look, it was 8 to 12 weeks before I even started to feel somewhat normal again, and it wasn't even until the off season, like the next season, where I felt back to being 100%, right? And LeBron came back a shade under 7 weeks. I think it was 6 weeks and 6 days, right? And he was not moving well in the second half of the Raptors game. You could tell he was really favoring his leg, and it makes sense to me that Woj's report would say that he's having trouble sort of cutting and exploding, because I think it was showing up a great deal on defense, more so than it even was on offense.
Darius, just quick point on that to kick back to you. We remember discussing that 22-6 Raptors run at the end of the first half. And even so, I wondered if even on that shift, which was after LeBron had gone back a couple of minutes earlier, if I rewatched it and I didn't rewatch that shift. I watched like about a minute of it. You probably watched the whole thing. So I wonder how much that would color the way we look at it. LeBron on defense, right? LeBron not initiating the same on offense. And maybe that was where that started.
I didn't even need the rewatch. Like, watching it live, I thought he is not as active defensively in general, right? So you could tell he was sort of saving his body in ways where he thought, if I'm positioned here, maybe it will deter this. I don't necessarily have to like move then if I stand here, right? So there was much more standing. And when he was moving, it was choppier steps. It was not the, like, we talked about this a few pods ago, Pete, but you called it sort of the stampede closeout that LeBron has. That is not only an effort play, but it's just the way that he moves. He moves with such force, right? And you could, it's pretty obvious with a guy like LeBron when he's moving more gingerly, because he is not the sort of fluid, like, oh, graceful. Like, he can be that, right? But that is all backed up by power and force. And so when he is not moving that way, it's clear, it's obvious. And I chalk that up directly to the ankle, right? And so I don't know if, like, look, LeBron, similar to Kobe and every other sort of super high level athlete that really cherishes their body and understands what it means to take care of their body, he's going to be maniacal with this treatment. He talked about this in the aftermath of coming back, right? And just sort of describing, like, I spent more time treating my ankle than I spent sleeping, basically, right? And so that's going to continue, but will 3 more days make a difference? Will 7 more days make a difference? What about 10? What about 14? Right? And that's where I don't have answers to that. I'm not a doctor. I think even a doctor wouldn't have answers to that. The guy who has the answers won't even be LeBron. It'll just be how he feels day to day. But I don't want to say I'm skeptical, but I'm concerned. And I think that's going to dovetail into a bunch of different conversations here. But Pete, What are the implications of, like, look, LeBron's not going to sit out the playoffs, I would imagine. If he's 75%, if he's 80%, I think he will try to manage this. But what are the implications of what things look like then in the wake of LeBron not being his best and the Lakers sort of trying to reconfigure themselves in a way that resembles the best version they can be with a more limited LeBron?
Yeah, it depends on what he can do, right? If he's having issues with cutting and with lateral movements, that's a big impact on what we can do defensively, right? We saw little flickers with AD looking like himself against Denver, that I think this can be a really dominant defensive team. And I think that is our path going forward, right? It's difficult for me to speculate because I don't know how capable LeBron will be. But I will say that if we zoom out and look at the rest of the league, there's no other team where I'm like, man, LeBron not quite himself. That's the difference between us beating this team and not beating this team. Every other high-level team in the league this year has legitimate issues, right? Legitimate weaknesses. And I would have said that the Lakers are less in that category earlier in the year, right? But with all of the injuries that we've had, we're impacted by that too. But there's no team that I think surpasses the Lakers. So it becomes a matter of, it's a different puzzle for LeBron to figure it out now. One of the things, Mike, that became really obvious to me when LeBron went out was, like, you know this beforehand, but seeing it, he absorbs so much of our decision-making and he can still do that. And so much of his dominance even still is, he used to be able to beat a guy off the dribble. He'd plant one foot just inside the free throw line and he'd freaking dunk on you. He hasn't done that as a Laker, really, right? But he's still dominant in ways where, of course, how he moves is going to matter. It's like him being reduced in that way will reduce. He won't be able to this is one thing I noticed with his turnovers. He likes to make jump passes. He's the best jump passer of all time, where he'll dribble down the lane, attack the basket, put a foot in the ground, jump in the air, and then spray the ball all over the court. He wasn't doing that as well. But so it will impact him, but he still has his mind. He still has his strength, right? Maybe not as strong because he doesn't have as strong of a foundation. But Mike, there is still a path to him being a great player while being limited in a league where a great, but maybe not 2018 LeBron James or 2020 LeBron James, I still think we can win the title.
Man, it's just such an interesting topic because he has so many gifts that we could spend. All right, well, if he's not driving, how could the Lakers still win? It's like, oh, well, you could put him in the post. You know, there's so many different branches off of his tree. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you have to do is you have to know what his limitations are. And if we're just judging off what we saw in the first two games, the thing that he's not doing as much is driving, right? Just straight breaking his man down, getting in the paint. And that still last year was the best weapon I felt like the Lakers had offensively, is that when it was needed. Think about the Clipper game, the Bucks game in March, when he just scored. It didn't matter if it was Giannis or Kawhi. He went and scored at the rim. They almost didn't need it as much in the postseason, it seemed like, because the way that the defense was so dominant. But still, like against Denver, you know, LeBron could still get into the middle of the paint, break it down, and just go that way. And that, to me, is still his, like, the reason why he's gotten to where he is that's the, nobody in the league has had an answer for that since he entered the league. But if he's not able to do that to that same extent, then we know that he's going to be smart enough to figure out where he is going to be effective. And that, I think, is Darius, is goes back to Pete's point that he just made. And that's I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well. This is going to be a fluid conversation. Like, we don't know when he's going to return. We don't know what he's going to look like when he returns. And we'll obviously be able to analyze it afterwards. But I think the fact that we have to have the conversation, though, does shift my whole big picture thing that I've been saying all year about how I think the Lakers are the title favorites, right? And I think that this does anything to do with LeBron's health, is that's the first thing that's going to chip into my whole big picture look at what the season's going to turn into. And I'm not saying they still can't win, which they could. And I'm curious to hear the way that you respond to this right here. But that is the first, that is the thing that has me, you know, anxiously anticipating what we're going to see and how he's going to be able to look like with the ankle.
So here's my optimistic take about LeBron and the Lakers in general off of however limited he is or isn't. There's no player I trust more to, and we talked about this some in the lead up to this season, actually, and I think that this conversation is relevant now, that he's going to make calculated decisions every single possession based off of what he can or cannot do. And he knows, he may have, in his mind, he may think that he has, you know what, I have three explosive plays in me a game now. Whereas before, maybe when he was young, that number was unlimited, right?
Yeah, Kobe used to talk about this. Kobe had a dunk on Emeka Okafor in the 2012 playoffs, I think it was, where he was like, this is one of, I only got so many of these in me.
Yes.
And we were down by like 9 or something. It changed the game. We ended up winning that game as a result. But exactly, Kobe knew, he was like, I only got a couple of these and I needed to use one of them then.
Well, speaking of Kobe, the season he tore his Achilles, I felt like he said to himself in his mind, like, this is my last great chance, right? I've got Steve Nash. I've got Dwight Howard. I've got Pau Gasol. We're scuffling, right? This is my last great chance. And I think that he said he threw that mentality out the window, right? And he's dunking on... he's dunking on two Brooklyn Nets, right? And he's dunking over Josh Smith, right? And game after game after game, he was sort of like
throwing caution
to the wind. I'll play 46 minutes. I'll play 47 and a half minutes. I'll play 50 minutes, right? Like there was literally no limit to what he was willing to do. I think, as much as I've been watching LeBron, he is not going to empty the clip in that way. Anthony Davis is 28 years old, right?
Like, yeah, man, he doesn't
need to. And he does not need to within the context of the trajectory of what he still has left in the tank as an overall player and the projections of this team. And so there's no player I trust more to make possession-to-possession decisions than LeBron James. We saw this in the Toronto game. There was a play where the Lakers were sort of on their heels a little bit, or things weren't going the right way. LeBron sort of said, it's time to get to the rim, this possession. I am going to put my head down. I'm going to get to the basket, and I'm going to get off a shot. I think every single game, he's going to have to make those possession-to-possession decisions, and I think he's smart enough to manage that well. I do think he has enough tools in his toolbox, right, in order to be effective game after game after game. The trickier thing for me is, does LeBron become someone the Lakers have to hide or scheme for defensively, right? Because you can manage your effort level and everything offensively based off of the stuff that you talked about, Pete, with just how smart you are and how can I move the chess pieces around the board in order to open up this guy? What action can I call? Where can I call over the screen and roll? What angle do I take? What's their scheme? How are they playing this? Adjust, counter. And that's what a great player does, a thinking player does. And I trust LeBron to do all of that stuff. Where it gets trickier to me is defensively. You cannot hide defensively. And LeBron will try. I was talking about what he was doing against Toronto. But sooner or later, the action will find you defensively because that's what offenses do, especially playoff offenses. And so that's where I would shift back to my more less optimistic view of how the Lakers may need to manage things that around LeBron.
No, it's just funny because maybe Pete, you can break the tie here, because I think I'm actually probably the opposite. I think that defensively, with his size and with his smarts. And as long as he's engaged, even if he's not able to cut quite as much, and who knows, maybe he will be, like, maybe he will figure this ankle thing out a bit better. But I worry more about, and this is from the team concept that the Lakers have, like, they have the mentality, I think, that we saw against Denver, and that enough of the guys on the team, well, that's a whole separate point, Pete, about you know, playing sort of the adults that, right? That's, I'll let you use your own phrase if you want to.
The responsible adults lineup, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a whole nother discussion. But the DNA of the team and LeBron smarts, I think that are going to be enough on that end. I worry about, they already get stagnant at certain times offensively. And there are a lot of those possessions that are kind of LeBron pulling the ball out, analyzing. And the antidote to those type of possessions is when he's like, okay, 5 seconds on the shot clock, fine. You know, I'm going to drive. And you can always get something that way. And if he doesn't have as many of those drives, as Darius said, if it's 2 or 3 or 5 even instead of 20, and then they have to have a whole different theory of the way that they're playing on offense so that they don't get stuck into those situations in the first place. And guess what? Dennis Schroeder, we don't know for sure when he's going to come back, and he's one of the main antidotes to that in theory. And if not, then who is it on the perimeter with him? Is it Caruso? Well, that's not ideal. Is it THT? Also not ideal. Does it have to be Anthony Davis then in different ways? And teams are just going to hard double AD, right? And so that's the side that I'm a little bit more worried about, Pete. So I'm curious for your perspective.
Yeah, I'm not as much worried about the defensive end in that it's bittersweet if LeBron can't move. And this is all speculative, right? Like, maybe he's kind of close. If he's kind of close to the guy that he would have been able to had he not gotten his ankle rolled up on, if he's able to get anywhere close to that, I still think we're going to be really good on that end. We saw how we were able to play on that end without him. But I think conceptually, so much of what we could have been is because LeBron can cover so much distance, right? Like, like Darius was just talking about hiding LeBron, and I was like cringing as he's talking at the idea. And I know you were too, right? Because you don't hide LeBron. In fact, LeBron is one of those guys that you build it around.
That's my point though. And this is why I'd be, so Pete, you just talked about earlier in the pod, the idea of if there's a path towards the Lakers being super competitive, it's defensively. Right. And so, right. Like, look, man, LeBron is not going to sell out defensively while holding things back in reserve offensively. Like I don't see that being the right equation.
No, absolutely. And so we are, all in all, we are overall a better defensive team than we are an offensive team. And so that speaks to Mike's point, right, in that one of the things that we can rely on, and we run a few basic sets, but we...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are very much built around the idea,
sure,
that we have two superstars. Superstars attract an additional defender. So if one of those superstars is limited in what he can do, that is a red flag on what we can do on the offensive end. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we saw some developments in that Denver game that I think really speak to some of the alternatives, some of the things, directions that we can go in with LeBron possibly limited. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in Instant Karma to 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated, member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. So I don't know if this was because LeBron and Schroeder didn't play and we were so without ball handling and guys who couldn't initiate offense that this was just something that we had to do. But even if we just stumbled on it, we started doing something in that Denver game, or started doing it more, that I loved, that I thought really activated AD in particular, but also can fit into this whole paradigm of maybe LeBron isn't able to drive to the basket as much. Maybe he isn't as, you know, capable of cutting and all of the things that he needs to do to break down a defense and put pressure on the rim. And that was use Anthony Davis as a ball handler. He ran a lot of ball screens with Andre Drummond. We're gonna have a whole pod at some point of maximizing the spacing, right? I think that that combination is ahead on the defensive end relative to the offensive end, but it was the first time since AD looked like himself. I think part of the reason why we were able to hold them down to 89 points was because of that combination defensively. But on the offensive end, since Drummond's not a shooter, you've got to find ways to get enough spacing so it's not just jump shots, right? Where he's not just in the dunker spot. Anyway, that'll be a whole pod of establishing that spacing. But AD is a really good ball handler, especially for his size. And with that combination of him and Andre Drummond, you start putting defenses into these very difficult situations where you have to deal with two very, very large individuals going downhill. Now, Denver is a drop coverage team, and other teams will switch, other teams will blitz and show different coverages. But Darius, I think that in the context of LeBron, putting the ball in AD's hands more, and not just in those, we're going to throw it to you 17 feet away from the basket and post you up. This, getting him downhill, getting him to attack the basket and use his handles, I think is a way to not just, you know, against a team like Denver, but in the context of LeBron, I think that it's a way to puncture a defense when maybe LeBron won't be as capable of doing that himself.
Well, I also think too that it plays to the diversity in Anthony Davis's game, and the Lakers need to try to do more of that for him. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And what's clear to me, so if you think back to last season, the second shot creator was Rondo, and he was pass, basically, right? Spot shoot, drive. He would drive to pass a lot. In the playoffs, he drove to score, which was useful. But he was almost always looking for AD. And you know, post up spin outs for lobs, all kinds of just like driving and dishing to him. He was trying to create angles for AD. The Lakers don't have that player on their roster anymore. And with Schroeder out, they don't even have a second shot creator, right? And so AD is your next best shot creator after LeBron. And getting him in those positions that you described is crucial to activating AD and just getting the ball into the hands of your best offensive option and saying, look, you go to work and go to work in a different way than just you trying to be a battering ram in the post or posting up and turning and facing, right? The other thing I would say is that AD, if he's being defended by a smaller player, he is not going to post and back down, back down, back down every single time. It's just not the player that he is. He's going to turn and face some, and then he's going to basically try to drive, or he's going to shoot over the top, right? And if his mid-range jumper is not going, that's not as an effective way of producing offense for the team or for himself. When you put him in the pick and roll, especially the 4-5 pick and roll, it puts him in a scenario where if they switch, good. Thank you very much. Now you've put your bigger, slower player, right? The one who was guarding Drummond, and you put that person against AD in space with a live dribble coming off of a screen action, which is not what you expect. Right. If they
and those are the guys that AD will cook up with, you know, inside out dribbles. Whenever you see AD really like dancing on the perimeter, it's almost always against those bigger, slower guys that are just a half step, three quarter steps behind.
Shaq talks about barbecue chicken, and he talked about that within the context of like dunks. Right. Like, I am putting you into the basket. AD thinks about barbecue chicken, and it is like, oh, crossover behind the back, like, look at me, you're on skates and I'm shooting right over the top of you because you're on your heels. And if they hard hedge, it's like there are different things, right? But AD is, he feels comfortable facing up. So I agree, putting him into those situations is going to be useful, but just getting him the ball more in general, right? Because look, we see it with Caruso. That's not his strength. Right. We all love Alex here. This is a slander free zone for Alex Caruso, but those are not his strengths. Right. And THT can be too wild at times. Right. You don't want to go full possessions, Mike, where Caruso and THT are the decision makers when Anthony Davis is on the court. Like, you don't even want it to be a post-up for Andre Drummond. Like, get the ball to your best player and let him go to work.
Some devil's advocate here, though, Darius, is he's not great at making those passing reads, right? So can he be an effective pick-and-roll guy, an effective wing guy who's I totally agree with you that substituting those AC and even THT possessions with more Anthony Davis is a good thing for sure. But can he do that well enough as a passer to make those effective possessions?
Also, the defense, though, and they know what the Lakers are wanting to do. And if LeBron and Shooter aren't out there, they were hard trapping AD and trying to make it into a spot where Caruso or THD had to make that play late. And then they were loading up on it. So that's the other thing too, that the defense is going to be aware of that. And that's why it's trickier to have, you know, those guys in the court at the same time, but you need it. You do need some of the THT shot creation. You're just going to also get some turnovers, right? Like, you're going to get a little bit of both.
I think the changing up the ratio is what's most important to me here. It's not that, look, you have to allow these guys, and when I say these guys, I mean Caruso, THT, the secondary ball handlers, or primary ball handlers, but lower on the totem pole in terms of being the most talented offensive player that's on the court at any given time. Of course, they need to have their chances, because you can't just... This isn't Tecmo Bowl. You can't just hand the ball to Jackson every single time and let him run zigzags and go score a touchdown. Like, that's not how the NBA works. You need a certain amount of variety here. So I like that the Lakers went to those possessions with AD Pete, but I don't think that that's a let's do this every single time down the court, because that's not going to be effective either. You need enough variety and then to mix things up in order to optimize all of the players.
So I think it's one of the things that we can go to, right?
Yes.
And And so then that begs the question of what are the other things that in this framework of LeBron may not be able to do quite what he used to be able to do, aside even aside from AD, what are our options there?
Mike, talk to me about Marc Gasol.
Well, first of all, Tekken Bowl is a Nintendo
yes.
game.
Yes.
1987, it came out. It is one of the greatest games of all time. I actually have it on my desktop, so I can actually play it right now. And pretend like I'm listening to Pete and Darius going back and forth on schematics. And Bo Jackson is the greatest player in the game.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like you can give him the ball and the team can guess your, there are only four plays. The team can guess your play and you can still score a touchdown. He's the one guy in the game. He's a code breaker. I recommend this to all kids, by the way.
Real quick, Tecmo Bowl. I was so into Tecmo Bowl so my dad worked in TV and we used to have one of those reel to reel recorders, right? Like with the two film reels, right?
And so the film room.
Yes. No, that's what I'm saying. So my buddy, Joe Lennox. So we would always play football and basketball and it would depend on the season, right? I was the quarterback. Joe is my receiver. And we'd play at recess all the time. If it was too cold for basketball, we were playing football. Anyway, Joe would come over to my place and my dad had this little gadget, right, that you could record on. And we set up a little mic stand. We're like 9 years old, right? And we would set up a little mic stand and we would announce the game and record it. Like while we were playing, me and Joe would do this while playing Tecmo Bowl. We were 49er fans, so we would do that. And so, I have lots of
only one run option for the 49ers. Still can be dominant though. Get Jerry Rice.
We had Montana and Rice. It was all good, right? We would record the game and we would do play by play of the game. I do believe it was the start of the film room. Yeah.
Did you say it was too cold? Did you say it was too cold to play basketball? Aren't you? Where did you grow up, Pete?
I grew up in Little Rock, California. So
yeah, it's never too cold. If it's in California, it's never too cold. I'm rejecting that. I'm from Minnesota.
So no, I'm not saying it was that you couldn't play it. I'm just saying that we would play football. If it's snowing or if it's like rainy, if it's all like muddy conditions, there was nothing better than going out on the dirt and then like, I'm going to dive for that and get myself covered in mud. And like, it was more of a preference than not possible for us to play basketball. But the rainy and snowy months, those were football months.
I'm ready to talk about Marc Gasol, Darius.
I was just going to say that I do very much appreciate the origin story of the film room.
Yeah. Yeah, we got there in an unconventional way, and it took a while, but I'm glad we got there.
I don't share much. Yeah.
Yeah, that was exciting. So, Marc Gasol, after the game, I was trying to figure out a delicate way to get at this with Frank Vogel, but I think the question was, what was the how much were you going to use Marc Gasol and Wesley Matthews without kind of the circumstances at play, which were Drummond got early foul trouble, mm-hmm. and which is the first time that Marc came in the game, and then Drummond got his fourth foul really early in the third quarter, or actually was his fifth foul. Yeah, his fourth and his fifth. And so I think he had four in the first half ultimately, and then he picked up his fifth in the third quarter, and that was the biggest reason why Marc played big minutes. And Marc, of course, was plus 17. And then, Wesley was playing because you had no LeBron and no Schroeder, and he was the next guy up in that guard rotation spot. So Frank's answer was that given the matchup with Denver specifically, that the plan was to find a way to use both Drummond and Gasol. And by the way, Drummond did about as well on Jokic as almost anybody else in the league does. Like Drummond held up okay on Jokic, I thought, for the most part. And it just that Marc played him better, and then Marc obviously gave you a lot more on offense. And that's the whole question moving forward. In this case, Trez didn't play in the second half because Marc went in early and played so well that Frank just kept him in for 13 straight minutes. And then he finally brought Drummond back in and the Lakers couldn't score again for a couple of different reasons. And then Marc finally comes into the game and they close it out. And I think that it's been obvious now for the last couple of weeks to what Marc does has to be on the court for certain minutes. The question is, I'll try to answer my own question instead of just stating what the question is. Like, I think what Vogel's going to do is play it like he did against this Nuggets team where the matchups dictate it. And just Mark, stay ready. He made the whole Pulp Fiction analogy with the wolf. And there are certain times where he's going to be playing 25 minutes. There are certain times where he's going to be playing 5 minutes. And I don't know if this will happen, but Darius, there may be a few DNPs depending on how the matchup goes. If Drummond's playing well, if Trez comes in against a small back line and does play well. And it's not going to be, I think, what people have been sort of advocating for, which is this guaranteed X number of minutes per game. It doesn't seem like that's going to come for any of the three except for Drummond, who it does seem like is going to start the halves. And after the start to the half, which I guess is what we saw last year, whether it was Dwight most of the time or JaVale, was then like things could change. You could see more Markieff. You could see more AD. And that's what it's going to be. It's that's, I think, what we've seen so far. And I think it's what we'll see moving forward.
Pete, you said something to me in my mentions on Twitter about just the idea of Mark needs to play, right? And there is a... I don't want to say Mark is a matchup buster. But I will say I don't necessarily think matchups apply to him for what the things that he adds, right? And this is independent of LeBron. I actually think that he helps even with LeBron on the floor, right? Like, because he, if especially maybe a diminished LeBron, because he could take on more passing responsibility. If LeBron needs to go to the post more, for example, then he's a spacer, right? And so there are ways to make things work. But I asked Mike the point blank question, like talk to me about Mark Gasol. You were in my mentions basically saying, like, look, man, like Mark needs to play. And this is a sentiment that I said that I agree with. And so what's your position on Gasol, and where do you see the value add? And then give me the flip side too. Like, why do you think it might be that he's not playing?
I don't know how to answer that last one, right? Like, I don't think there are many good arguments for him not to play. And the Mark, to me, it's a bright, to me, there's a bright flashing neon sign that says, you know, put Mark with the second unit, because they're so much more organized. When you've got, look, Ben McLemore can shoot all sorts of wild threes, right? Like, he can catch from any position. He can really get shots up quickly. And I think that speed, it's funny, with AD looking like himself against Denver, it was the first time where you saw little flashes of the oppressive speed and pace that we could play with. And even though Mark is not a fast player himself, the offensive spacing that he provides, we talk about Mark so much through the lens of how smart he is and his decision-making and how he can organize that second unit and all of that. But the fact that he can shoot means so much on a team where most of our players, their best attribute is doing something to get to the rim. That looks differently for THT than it does for Anthony Davis or Andre Drummond or Dennis Schroeder, right? They go about it in different ways. But most of our guys are at their best when going to the basket. Mark's shooting like 41% from three. And over the last, you know, 20 games or so, I would imagine that number is probably closer to 50%. But he's a good enough three-point shooter that he opens things up on a team where we have all of these really long droughts where we go 3, 4, 5 minutes without a field goal. We need to be able to open things up. And that's something, one of the things that you say, Darius, with Mark is that he's the guy that should probably be in there every game, and that it's Drummond and Trez that should be, you know, one or the other. I think that if we look at the reality of the situation, like Mike's saying, like Drummond is starting. And I would also say that the vast majority of time, Drummond is the right choice over Trez. But so much with Drummond's arrival has been that, like, it's been a Drummond versus Mark type of thing. I would argue that those are the two guys that should be playing. And that's no indictment on Trez, of course. But Drummond will, with the starting lineup, he can that speed and power and physicality and really oppressive, just dealing with athletes. I really love the fit. Then Mark can help organize a second unit that is in desperate need of that, is a great defender on a second unit that has a couple of guys that are not and can space the floor in a way that is the natural balance. And then if Trez has a Dario Saric or someone like that, or a small front line where he can kick their butts, by all means, right? Like, I'm not saying Trez should be totally out of it, but I'm with you, man, that Mark, like, there isn't a good argument for Mark not to play, right?
One of the things that I've been wondering about, Mike, and you probably have a better feel for this than me, and we'll wrap it up soon, but I've been wondering about this, is when Vogel talks about Drummond's playing time, it's almost always within the context of like, yeah, we're still trying to get him up to speed. We're still trying to get him up to speed. Do you think that it ever changes, that they're no longer trying to get him up to speed? He is up to speed at some point, and now the decisions about who plays and who doesn't will be more of a meritocracy than they are in terms of, because like, I can't help but listen to that comment game after, like whenever it comes up, that Vogel says that, right? And it's like, is that just something that maybe he's saying because it placates everything and it sort of like serves as a nice placeholder? Or do you think that that's actually a part of their thinking still, and that there will be a point in time where Vogel's mindset will switch on this a little bit?
Yes. So placate is a good word there to describe kind of this whole thing. And this is where we have to have some deference to Frank Vogel, because this is one of the things that he's good at. And it's what ends up happening instead is that, and so remove yourself from this, because I consider you guys to be experts. And this is don't think that I'm taking any kind of shot here. This is where like the Twitter coach comes in. And tries to say, well, how could you possibly be playing sure. this guy over that guy? What are you looking at? And guess what? You do not know better than Frank Vogel.
Neither do Darius. Don't know better. Right? Like that's a whole different level of understanding.
No, I know, but you guys are also. I really do think, you know, you really are more plugged in and actually pay attention to these things more. But like it's this happened last season. I keep harkening back to this. And Vogel figured out this recipe of being able to be straight with these guys. And then when the playoffs came, he really could go to almost anything that he wanted without a problem, because the guys felt like he had been with them all season. He has stayed by Markieff Morris's side throughout this shooting slump. He stayed with KCP last year. He stayed with Danny Green last year. He stayed with Rondo last year. That is what he's doing, I think. And now he's giving Drummond a real chance for to integrate as best as possible. He's giving Ben McLemore every chance that he can. He gave J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters a real shot in the seeding games. And then when it all came down to it, like the Lakers were so good in the postseason that he didn't have to go to his best. Like, hey, here are my five guys that I absolutely trust, or my six guys. Like Mike D'Antoni does that from day one of the regular season when he was coaching. Tibbs does that from day and when you get to a postseason situation, I think that's hurt those coaches, because it's like, all right, well, here's the fastball, or not even the fastball, here's my A game, and if the other team can meet that, then what do you turn to? So Frank has this philosophy, which I think has been proven out, and it, of course, it all helps to have LeBron and AD, where I'm gonna keep enough of all of these guys, 13 guys. Even McKinney, to an extent, I think he could still call on, because he's given him enough rope and enough confidence that he's going to be able to call that. And when they get, Darius, to get to the more of the point of your question, when they get to a point against the certain matchup, and it's clear to not just us, but to certainly to Frank Vogel and his assistant coaches and on the film, and to LeBron freaking James, when they watch game one in the film room, this dude just is not going to be able to play much. And that dude could be Mark in a current matchup. It could be Trez, it could be Drummond. And then that's the point where there are no complaints. We can't hear about it. Look, you're just not going to play. If Mark's better as the starter in this matchup or off the bench, then I think that's what they have to go to. But he is going to wait almost, it's going to seem like too long at certain points of this regular season, where we've all been, I shouldn't say we all, Darius specifically has been asking for a certain level of, right, of like cohesion. And I keep pushing back and being like, he's going to wait until he has to.
Just to speak to that, I think that's fair. And Vogel's in the room. We are not in the room. We're not in the room. We don't talk to these guys every day. And so he deserves deference in this way. The counter to that is that I do think that when it comes to Mark specifically, he brings enough to the table with his smarts, with his actual offensive ability and his skill set and his defensive acumen to be a regular rotation player.
And I agree. I'm with you. I agree. And I've been all season, whether it's a little bit harder to do it like publicly without bringing up what the context is, but I've been fending off text messages in like January from people that I know around the league and even around the team. They're like, what's going on with Mark? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's not supposed to be out there taking about, are you looking at the Lakers net rating when he's playing? He's doing little things. He's setting, like he was playing and he wasn't even playing. It wasn't that he was playing great, but he was playing exactly how he should have been playing. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, everybody's Mark. Why isn't Mark playing more? Well, everybody was criticizing him earlier in the year. And has he taken his game up a level since Drummond came? Yes. I think that's also because the playoffs are approaching and he's a proud guy and he's building up. But so it's all of these things. So you're not wrong about any of the basketball observations about Mark. And I totally agree with you. I'm just trying to provide that context of what I think of the reason why it hasn't just happened. And part of that is to keep Trez engaged mentally and sort of be able to be proud of what he's trying to bring to the team. It's to pay off why they got Drummond to come. It's all of that stuff. And I don't because Frank Vogel definitely didn't watch that game and think, I don't know, Mark. Like Mark, another way to put it, he watched the game too, and he knows that Mark deserves it.
No,
right?
Absolutely. I also think that we generally look at the season in some ways as a preseason. It's such a good point, Mike, about how keeping everybody engaged, because different playoffs are like the playoffs are beating that team that's across from you. And that's not the regular season, right? Because that team is a different team every couple of days. But then it becomes a matter of beating that team across from you. And Denver, for example, a team that's built around running their offense through their five, completely different challenge than a Clippers team that's built around wings. That's a completely different challenge from a lot of, say, Utah, that their offense is Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley, right? And so the types of players that you need to counter them, it's broader than that main eight that you really trust that can get you a lot of regular season wins because you establish that continuity. Phil Handy talks about this on IG all the time where he's like, yo, we're building toward the playoffs. This is something that, you know, some teams are built for the regular season. Other teams are built for the playoffs. And that's exactly the point, right, Mike, that keeping all of those different guys engaged is really important. The one pushback I'd give to that is that Mark, in a season where we've had so little cohesion and so little continuity, a guy that pretty much fits into whatever it is that you want to do, that like you don't have to worry about Mark. Yeah. Mark's going to go out there, play well, do Mark things, and then all of the other places where we kind of need to make tweaks, like some bits of solid ground in the rotation are helpful. And I think Mark could be that. Anyway, this is a long conversation that this will not be the last of the Mark Gasol, Trez and Drummond conversation. But good to see Lakers get back on track. We'll be back. Got a game against the Clippers. Then we've got Phoenix and Portland and the Knicks coming up. Yeah, at Portland.
Yeah. Clippers and Portland back to back, which will be tricky because that's the tiebreaker game with Portland and not having LeBron. So, but we'll have plenty to talk about after those two
games. We will. And I think we'll see the differences in the big men in those games too. And so I think it'll be interesting to watch with those specific matchups, how the big man rotation plays out and who can and will be useful versus the different types of matchups the team will see.
I had a 10-second closing thought though, just based off that with Mark. Maybe Frank knows that Mark can handle this type of, like, even if he didn't love it at first, and maybe that's a little trickier if he just says all of a sudden, okay, Mark, you're the backup center now, and Trez, we'll see.
Maybe you lose Trez for the year.
Maybe that's part of the locker room dynamic, and same thing with Drummond. Hey, you came here, but now you're not starting. Now it's Mark. Like, what we know, and as Mark said with the Wolf, like, he can handle it. he can. He's a big boy. He might not always be happy about it, but guess what? He's played his ass off since he's come in, and so that might be part of the calculation. I think you're
spot on with that. Big week, lots of stuff happening. This has been a year that's been so focused on what this team will be that we're finally getting into more of the present tense, right? I'm really excited about that. So big week coming up. Going to have a few more shows, but until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddy pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.